Hello and welcome to another of the Show and Tell podcasts, joined by Stuart Lee, the opera writer and occasional comedian, and also by Martin, obviously regular musician. And Martin's brought a slightly smaller accordion this week through laziness. Yeah. And Martin will play. What kind of theme tune would you like? We always allow the guest to choose
something sort of Spanish sounding.
Oh, like that?
Yeah, that'll do.
Did that sound sort of flamenco-y?
Yeah, that's enough.
Could we have it a little bit longer? What's that weird rustly noise?
Oh, the rustly noise is the bellows of this incredibly cheap toy accordion. I was at work today, so I couldn't bring the full-sized mega accordion, so I've got this tiny toy one. Is that really annoying?
Well, it's quite rustly, isn't it? But never mind.
That plasticky rustling.
Oh, and also we're joined by Josie Long, who's a little bit late.
I'm like 6 minutes, but I'm really sorry.
Well, not really 6 minutes. We decided to start earlier, especially for you. Do you remember me ringing you?
We
were starting early because you've got a meeting, Josie Long.
I'm so sorry, I didn't realise.
It's all right, Josie Long.
There was a great spiritualist church in Stoke Newington down round Allen Road, which for some time, about 6 months, had a big painted sign outside inviting passers-by to come in for Bibble readings. B-I-B-B-L-E. Which is a shame, because like, it's kind of a tenet of your faith, learn how to spell it. But then on the other hand, the Bibble sounds really good, doesn't it?
Well, what,
a
maybe
kind
they
of fount of folk wisdom. It's in the Bibble. It kind of sounds better than
Well, it
the
sounds
Bible.
Dribbly, because Bibble and dribble. So it does sound like you get in there and they go, hello, everyone, now we've got, this is reading from the Corinthians. Oh, so you really do mean the Bibble. Yeah, it's a slightly elongated version of the Bible with more kind of lisps, and
it sounds more archaic. It's a Bibble.
But it does sound, you're right, it does sound fun, doesn't
it?
Yeah.
The Bibble.
Do you want the Bible or the Bibble? It's like an old Max Miller routine. What do you want? Do you want the white Bible or the blue Bibble? The white Bible or the blue Bibble? What's the blue Bibble? It's like the Bible with all dirty words in. No one ever knows references to Max Miller. I don't know why I bother.
Well, you know, he hasn't got his own podcast. That's why he's falling from favour.
So do you think we should have a blue podcast and a white podcast?
I think you should have podcasts by dead comedians, and you should use modern technology available to kind of create a programme that predicts what they would say. I saw Max Miller's Stooge, which I think was, he was called Eli Woods.
Oh, he was many people. He was Jimmy James
as well, yeah. I think it was Jimmy James principally, but I think he'd done with that. But I saw him in pantomime in Birmingham when I was a kid, which was weird because you'd go to pantomimes and there'd be all these people and you didn't know who the hell they were, and all the pensioners would be going mad for them. And Eli Woods was one of them. He's a fantastically gormless man. But you're right, he was Jimmy James's stooge, I think, not Max Miller. He was in that famous sketch with Jimmy James, Eli Woods and Roy Castle where they argue about the contents of a small box. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, it's almost like the old Peter Cook sketch about I've got a viper in here.
Yeah, it is. It's the same thing. Yeah, it's. In fact, I expect the Peter Cook sketch probably has a sort of satirical relationship with that classic musical routine, which is lost in the midst of time to us.
What have you been up to lately, Jason?
This is just making me hate myself.
You're not allowed to talk because you bought a rustly accordion and have spoilt the whole recording of the show by bringing a cheap... This is a Paramount podcast.
I could do it with my mouth. I could try to make the sound of the accordion.
Just ask you now, when you did the culture show on BBC Two... Did you sometimes go, sorry, I've been at work today, so I've just bought my rustly crisp packet accordion? Or did you always bring the good one?
I did bring the rustly one, and those were the weeks that they didn't broadcast it, because they only broadcast 3 weeks of it.
It's not your fault, but the culture show is terrible, isn't it? It really indicates the complete collapse of the any intellectual credibility on BBC Two, I think.
I think an hour to describe all of culture that is relevant.
Yeah, but it's the way it's presented. It's like news round, and someone will sort of go, hello... Do you like reading? There's a new book out this week. It's by Ian McEwan. Should we find out about it? Kind of like that, isn't it? It's as if it's like
in the last series when there was a cultural matter that they didn't have time to cover. They got this idiot with an accordion to play a minute of that thing on the accordion at the end of the program. That's how low it had sunk.
And that was you
predominantly.
That was
edited
me,
out,
yes.
though.
The culture show is the kind of thing. If it was at 5:15 on BBC One and it was aimed at children, it was like a thing for like precocious teenagers. You'd think that's pretty good that they've covered some of that stuff like that for kids. But it's actually on for adults.
Yeah.
It's an adult programme.
It's on after the pubs close as well. On at like 11 o'clock at night on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
It's the word of its generation. You know, previously people wanted to see someone licking a colostomy bag to get on TV. Now it's Mark Commode looking at a tall tower and seeing how it's reminiscent of The Exorcist.
Mark Commode licking a commode.
That would be excellent. Commode on commodes is surely waiting to happen. But I find that the cult show kind of combines two things, which is that you're right, it's both kind of news roundy and childish, but also boring as well. You know, it's like a kind of ebullient teacher who goes, I'm going to make something really fun and exciting involving physics by making this thing go bang. Mm. But at the same time, the bang that happens is all kind of squibby. And you kind of go, well, it was just a squibby bang. I'd rather have just been given the tedious text.
Yeah, it's neither one thing nor the other. But it fulfills some remit. Fulfills a remit. It's a remit fulfilling thing, like all those terrible Alan Yentob Imagine documentaries where, if they're about anything interesting, he gets to the point where he ought to be analysing it and is a little bit scared that it might bore people, and so he just says that the person had gone mad rather than rather than having to like analyse their great work.
My favourite one was, I think, one of the first ones where Alan Yentl was going, so what is it about the British sitcom? Coupling has come to Hollywood. It's going to be amazing. And then they had to add a 2-minute bit at the end and go, Coupling didn't go very well and they haven't really commissioned any of them. And it just felt this whole journey, this long journey, and then going, it was a disaster. Josie, you like young people's shows, don't you? Because you, as we always know, represent the demographic of youth.
You've only got another 6 months of that, then I'm 25. Then useless. All the things I've brought are much more puerile than what we've been talking about. I bought a mask of Frankenstein's monster.
Nice.
But I've written a little thing about it.
Well, that fits in. That's a good thing, because
it was Halloween the other day.
Also, going back to the God thing, Richard Dawkins the other day was writing about how masks backwards and forward, the way that the brain and the eye look at a mask, which is from either side, and people got very cross about it. So I wonder if we can use your Frankenstein mask to prove the non-existence or existence of God.
I'll give it a go.
In Halloween 1975, I had a Frankenstein mask like that. And to make it more scary, I cut off loads of my own hair and glued it onto the mask. And my mum was really cross, and I couldn't understand why, because I saw my hair as a sort of craft resource.
Yeah,
and she took me straight to the hairdressers to have it sort of corrected with a huge clump.
Which part of your head did you cut it from?
Just the front. Clumps out from all over it to make the mask better. Because imagine, this is quite frightening, Josie's Frankenstein mask. But imagine that with human hair. Imagine with clumps of a child's hair glued onto it.
What makes it more funny is because it's kind of goofy as well. It's a goofy Frankenstein
and it's
monster.
Cross eyes. As if your eyes are. So it's going
to
have two pairs of eyes.
I wonder what that was meant to be. That's meant to be eyes then, is
it? Two pairs of eyes. Do you want to hear the thing that I wrote?
Yeah.
Okay, it goes.
Just so you know, Josie, just take your headphones off and then you can put the mask on.
Okay, it goes. Hello, welcome to the new Dragon Chinese restaurant. Oh, hello. I've got a table booked under the name of the Frankenstein's Monster. Oh, sorry, I've got a Frankenstein. Oh, God, I get that all the time. Because a lot of the time people think that it's called Frankenstein, but it's actually called the Frankenstein's Monster.
Could you play that in a slightly more gothic manner?
I was sitting in a pub in Richmond once on my own. It was in the mid-90s. And I got talking to this old man.
You weren't that unpopular in the mid-90s. That was actually your heyday.
Anyway, you see...
The late 90s was a bit of a dip.
Maybe
I mean,
the late 90s was... It was 1996, I remember. And this old man started talking to me, and he seemed very nice. And we talked for about an hour. And apparently he'd invented the hovercraft, right? And he was talking about how he'd invented the hovercraft and whatever. And I went, what's your name? And he told me, and I went, but your name's not associated with the hovercraft, is it? This was about an hour of talking to him. And he went, no... And that's because the patent was stolen off me by Jews. Right. And then he started off about all these things that he'd done and how Jews had got them off him.
Right.
And then he went on about that science of how head size...
phrenology
determines whether you're evil or not. And he was the most terrifyingly mad racist inventor.
Is it phrenology, though?
Racist inventor.
Weirdly, when I was touring the country trying to defend Jerry Springer the Opera in public meetings from furious evangelists, the leader of the pressure group that were trying to bring it off stage in York was Patrick Troughton's son.
Which one? David?
No, he's not an actor. He's the other one. He leads an evangelical church in York.
So there's a triple Troughton, because there's David Troughton, there's another Troughton as well.
Yeah. And at one point he said to me, "Don't talk to me like that about theatre. I'm not some kind of Philistine. My father is Patrick Troughton, who played Doctor Who." As if that indicated that we would understand.
But as we know from genetics, again, going back there, it doesn't matter what Patrick Troughton did in his life, no. Genetically it would not have been passed on to his
Troughton.
Son.
Yeah, you try saying
Troughton.
That to him.
Because I've been touring around recently, I have been reading the Bibles in that every time I've
oh,
run out of things.
I read loads of Proverbs when we were for Belfast, when we were at Book Club Belfast. I read loads of Proverbs because I thought that if my dad, I could sort of, if I had an argument with my dad, I could quote Proverbs and then he'd be stumped.
And what was your favourite one?
That is the rustliest accordion.
It's something like,
it really
the Lord prefers
bizarre,
you to do what is right and just than to pay sacrifice. That's basically for if he goes, oh, well, I've got to go to church. I go, well, the Lord prefers you to do what is right and just than to pay sacrifice.
Have you read Leviticus? Because that was the one that I was advising people to read.
That's fun.
Leviticus is bizarre because for some reason it's acceptable for a lot of people just to leave that out as a book. You know, the Orthodox Jews kind of take it on board, but other Christians will go, oh no, we don't need to bother about that one, we just use the other. But Leviticus, what astounded me about that when I read it, I think it was in Harrogate, which is the best place to read Leviticus, was the fact that there's all this damnation in there and sacrifice of the best lamb. And then halfway through, after you've got the man lying with a man lying with animal, it then says, if you've got a problem with mildew, this is the best. And this is the word of God. The word of God goes directly from going, smite both men and kill them. Mildew can play absolute havoc with tents.
No, it's great. Is it there or Deuteronomy 23 where there's advice to do about what to do if you basically have a wet dream?
Oh, I'm not
sure. If a man is unclean within the camp in the night, he must go outside and burn all the bedclothes and everything, because the Lord God will be walking around your camp, and if he sees something that offends him, he'll withdraw his support from the troops and all that kind of thing. And there's that other odd bit in Leviticus, I think it is, about if a man has unequal weights in his sack, which is basically if you have differently sized testicles, you will not be allowed to enter the kingdom of heaven. Which seems impossibly harsh.
What can you do to remedy that, though?
You can't do anything.
You can
try and
little...
crush one. Then it's really small as the other.
I don't see why the Lord would want that.
If you see, well, when a child is growing, if you can notice that abnormality at that point, what you can do is take a small clay pot specifically fashioned to hinder the growth of one of the
testicles. Like a bonsai?
Yeah, in the same way as we've talked before about the travelling folk who used to place their babies in a pot so that their head would grow big but they'd have a small body and then they would make money from them being freaks.
Did they really do that?
I don't think they did, but there was certainly a lot of rumour. I mean, rumour as they travelled around.
Or do you work?
He went past their circus, he saw a pot, he put two and two together.
I think the travelling folk have... hard enough time as it is in the current climate without you just making stuff
up. No, this was old travelling folk, and this I will accept.
Oh, when they were evil.
No, well, I'm not saying the real travelling folk, in much the same way as my favourite bit of, I was reading about kind of anti-Semitism in the last 1,000 years, and you probably know this rumour before, I think it started in about the 12th century, which was the reason that Jews made bread using the blood of infants... Right, which again, I say now, I don't believe they did. Mm. At this point, it was already rumour.
I do believe it.
But the reason that you have just made a big mistake, Josie Long. But the reason they did that was because not only women, but the men menstruated too.
Really?
That was the rumour, and that was still going 800 years later.
Wow.
In the 1930s. No, I'm all right for orange. Thanks, Josie. I sort of like Leviticus, as much as I recommend, is the fact that always it is the best thing to do is you've got to give your best bit of meat to the priest and he'll burn it. Mm. And then he has to eat the best bit. Mm. Which does give me an idea that it wasn't necessarily the word of the God, but the word of hungry preachers.
Who liked meat.
Yeah, hungry.
The best meat.
It contradicts Proverbs. Because God would rather you were right and just than make sacrifices.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not a consistent work because it's the work of many hands. It's a tapestry of the work of many hands.
Josie, when you were in Edinburgh this year, did you walk past Waverley Station at all and manage to meet some Christians who gave you Jack Chick comics?
Yes, I got one in Spanish for my boyfriend as well.
Oh, I've got a Spanish one as well.
Which one's yours?
I can't remember. Mine's the one about the gunslinger.
I think it's called Is This Your Life? But I can't remember how
that's
in Spanish.
One. This is your like that was that that's his top selling title, and that is the one which is trying. I've got a Chinese edition of that.
Oh wow! Yeah.
For those who don't know, I'll just quickly explain. Jack Chick is this guy who you probably know how many years has he been doing this?
I don't know, since the '50s and '60s, I think.
These little pocket cartoon strips which will explain all the different reasons that you're probably going to hell, and if you're lucky, outside Edinburgh Waverley Station during the festival, there were some very nice. I mean, they were very kind of happy people giving out cartoon strips. And if you looked, I'm Will Hodgson, who's another comedian who has pink hair and a moon face and carries Care Bears hanging off his belt. And therefore, when he tried to get them off them, they would have a chat with him to go, "Oh well, this bloke definitely looks like he's going to hell."
Yeah.
So whereas me, because I look so bland anyway, and possibly someone who may well go to all manner of Baptist schools, they just hand them out to me, going, "Well, you're just one of the normal kind of bland gospel types."
Right.
But they're great. What was the one? So you got one in Spanish. Is this your life?
Yeah, I did. But when I was growing up, we used to all go to church together, my family. And then when sort of everything started going a bit weird between my parents, me and my sister started going to this Lutheran church at the top of our road. And at the time, it seemed really benign. But the only things that I have as memories of it were really good church suppers and like always being given Jack Chick books. It's actually quite sinister.
It's a perversion, you know, of Christianity. What Jack Chick does, he kind of exaggerates all the most aggressive parts and misses out the forgiveness elements.
Well, he's
really terrible.
He's very much cherry picked the most hateful elements of the Old Testament. I mean, have you got a Bewitched one?
Yeah, I've got hundreds of them. But you know what? I used to find them really funny, but now having been like on the receiving end of those kind of people, I don't really even want them in the house anymore. They just make me feel sick. So if you want all my Jack Chick comics, Robin, and my book about Jack Chick that I've got.
You've got a book about Jack Chick?
Oh, I'm around, yeah.
Can I have it? I'll give it to my boyfriend.
It's a sort of biography catalogue of all the Jack Chick comics, and it tells you which ones are rare and what which languages they've been translated into, and also about how he came up with the idea, which was he read a thing about how Mao and the Chinese communists use comic books for propaganda. And this is an interesting thing. Obviously, he's against communism, Jack Chick, but he saw how well these had worked and decided to adopt this as a way of spreading the gospel. But the really funny thing about that is that, as an argument, that kind of undermines his own thing. If he just feels that why they worked was because the medium of the comic book was powerful rather than that communism was true, then surely the same thing could be true about his evangelical comic books. There's a similar one called Dark Dungeon about people playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, yes, I've seen.
And they're playing with their figures and the devil's going, "Ha, ha, ha, they're playing the fantasy role-playing game that I want them to play."
That is generally the normal thing, that the devil is normally going, "Everything's going to play." Didn't you? I remember, we'll talk about chatting, but when we went to Birmingham years ago and you went into a fighting fantasy shop.
Yeah.
And I can't remember. Do you remember? Because I remember that it was strange enough. It was the evening that we found out Bill Hicks had died, and that Fred and Rosemary West had committed some horrific murders.
When we were on the road. In the old days. Yeah.
You went to whatever those
Games Workshop.
Yeah, that's it.
Why did I go in there?
Well, you went in there and to browse. I don't know why I always remember this. You went in this browse, and the man came up to you and went, "Is there anything particular you're after, sir?"
Yeah.
And you went, "Oh no, not really. It's just I used to be into all of this about 10 years ago." And they went, "I think you'll find the world of fighting fancy role-playing games has changed somewhat in the last 10 years.
That's right. But it was longer though, because actually I remember it was 1978, and there was a science fiction shop called Dungeons and Starships in a bit of Birmingham that's been entirely demolished now, and the first Dungeons and Dragons book came in there. It was just a little pamphlet really then, you know, it cost about $2.99, and they weren't figures or anything. You had to just use little bits of cardboard, and it just seemed like the most amazing thing. And I played that fairly full on until I was about 12, 13, from about the age of 10 to about 12, 13, and then I worshipped the devil as a result of that.
Well, as we all know, particularly in the last few years, poor Stephen Green, what will he do?
I used to go to Games Workshop when I was about 9, 10, because I thought it would be a good place to meet boys. It used to be me and then loads of sort of 10, 11, 12 year old boys ignoring each other. That's all that would. I'd go in and I'd be with my sister and we'd go, "Oh, should we buy some more skeletons?" We didn't even play the game. We just really, really beautifully decorated the figures. That's all we did. And then we go back in and sort of look at all the boys, and they wouldn't even look at us.
Well, I used to paint them up. You know, I've kept them. I'm amazed that I ever had that amount of hand to eye coordination.
It's very precise, isn't it? Yeah. Like, you've got an elf and you have to paint like his little moustache or whatever.
Yeah.
Stuart, what have you brought along with you?
Well, I've brought in this cornflake box full of soft packaging because I wanted to wrap up this, which is very precious to me.
Oh, I actually thought you had brought in a cornflake box to show what you'd won from Ice Age 2.
Who wants to describe this 9-inch-high wooden sculpted figure?
Martin or Josie?
Josie.
What can you see there?
Okay, so it's a... So
say what you see.
It's probably like a Native American Indian thing.
It is, yeah. It's a Native American Indian...
If this is a game show, I'd be already racking up the points.
It's a Native American Indian doll made to instruct children of the Hopi tribe in their religious beliefs.
Oh, gosh. So it's a man, and he's wearing, like, a little skirt, and he's got around him, like, a knapsack with something in it that looks a bit like a banana.
It's yellow corn.
And with in his right hand, he's got, like, a maraca.
Yeah.
His left hand, he's got a sharpened feather.
Yeah.
He's wearing what look like ski boots, those UGG boots that were fashionable.
They're some kind of calf skin thing or something.
Then on his head, instead of a face, he's got 5 sort of nodules around him, like he's some sort of spaceship, and a thing coming out of his head, like a protrusion at the top, and a mouth that's like... It's like a duck's beak. Ah, but it's sort of three of the things coming out the top of his head are like bulbous nodules, and two of them are like duck's beaks. Like, he's got duck's beaks for eyes. Oh, he's also wearing a scarf.
What we should do is, if people at the beginning, we could re-edit this, and so we go, people at home can start drawing it, and then if we can have a reveal button on the website, so you draw, and then see how close your description is, and your drawing is, to Josie's...
He also has a circle on his front and back that's got white specks in it. That's
yeah,
black.
I don't know what that's all about.
Okay.
Well, what it is, this is one of the there are many subclasses of Pueblo Indian clowns, and which are used in religious festivals. And this is one called Mudhead. But this isn't the main type. The main type of Pueblo Indian clown, that's the Pueblos of the Indians of the Southwest, Arizona, New Mexico, is the Cachare. We haven't got a figure of that, though. The Cachare is a man. He's painted from head to foot in black and white stripes. He's got a little loincloth on. And in his hair, there's all corn stuck in his hair. And the reason I brought this in is because I was in New Mexico 2 weeks ago doing a documentary for Radio 4 about this subject, which I've always been fascinated by. And it's normally very difficult to get to see the clowns in action. But we were able to go to a kind of a day of misrule at Taos Pueblo, where we saw the Cachares cause chaos in the Pueblo village, which was really great.
Do you know anything about the Dogon tribe, or the Dogon tribe? Now, just because you're talking about that, because I was reading something...
Did they put their children in pots to give them big heads?
It was about the different lines in comedy. And in this book that I was reading, they were just saying that they do this thing, again, during kind of a similar sense of misrule festival, where there's things like all the old blokes go and kind of pretend to get off with their nieces, who are like 10 and stuff like that. But no one... There's nothing...
Yeah.
It's this kind of weird, exaggerated sexuality. But they all just laugh, go... Look at old Uncle Tony. He's pretending to rape Julie, who's only 8.
Yeah.
But it's all a bit of a kind of...
Yeah, well, you know, lets off a bit of steam, doesn't it? You know, I think that's a kind of interesting thing. It was like a pressure valve, like a pressure release. And you also got the feeling, having watched this Pueblo society being so actively dismantled and satirised, that all the quite conservative things about it would be able to stay intact for far longer, because you'd kind of seen... what would happen if you disobeyed them.
That sounds good.
Wow.
Documentary I did, I just went to Leeds and interviewed a bloke who'd married a woman in Thailand.
Oh, yeah, what was that like?
It was rubbish.
What was the man's experience of that?
He was brilliant. He was 85 and he'd met this 30-year-old woman.
And he was really happy with it.
Yeah.
That's
meanwhile,
great.
Meanwhile, his children were less happy with him going to live in Thailand. And that was the show I told when we talked about, because you did your documentary on Channel 5 and went doing a double bill of sitting there going, that's the bit they cut there.
Yeah.
And because that was the time that I wasn't allowed to say curmudgeon because they said the demographic wouldn't understand it.
But it's nice
that
they
made me go around in. Oh, I'm not going to.
But it's
into
nice
it.
That a story about a Western man marrying a much younger Thai had a happy ending for everyone concerned.
Except for everyone else around them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's not up to them, it's You know, I just burped then. Sorry, that's bad for a podcast.
No, it's not. Again, I said it's meant to be a verite podcast, right. That shows the truth. On a different subject, as we get towards the end, yesterday I fell over flat on my face, sober, and I haven't...
Did you cut yourself?
Yeah, just a little bit, just on my knuckles there, on my way to go and meet Julian Fellows, who, of course, you've met as well.
Yes, this week.
When your children... Josie, when was the last time you fell over, flat on your face? Because I fell over typically in front of loads of people as well. Mm. I wasn't concentrating, the sun was in my eyes. I thought it was just a slope. It wasn't, it was some steps. I went right down. And I remember when I was young, I used to fall over a lot, but I don't...
Maybe a year ago, I got a big graze knee.
Right. I remember falling over. I got off the bus once at home when I was about 14. I got off the bus and I fell over on my face. And I stood up and there were loads of like surly teenagers at the bus stop and girls and stuff. And I went, thank you very much. And I'll be performing here again tomorrow. As a kind of joke to like diffuse the situation. And they all just went, you fucking idiot. And we're like, going, idiot.
Aren't people nice?
I know, it was horrible. It was really, I thought I'd be able to like turn it around.
Got out of that one, made it worse.
Yeah, made it worse, yeah.
Martin?
I fell over, this is quite dangerous, and it's drunkenly was... Is it falling over, falling off something? Is that the same as falling over?
It's within the genre.
I ended up with that. What's that enormous big? It's not Marble Arch. It's the other one by the bottom of Hyde Park. If you imagine you're going down Park Lane to Victoria, the enormous big
Admiralty Arch.
Is that Admiralty Arch? The huge big roundabout is going over there. Yeah. I was in a hurry. I was running to get like a 3 o'clock train or something from Victoria, and I'd been up.
I tell you, living in Croydon is a curse.
It is a curse. I was thinking, actually, Mudhead is one of the stops, I think, on the way to Croydon.
It goes through Mud Chute.
I don't even know.
What if it was Mudhead?
Woodmanstone. Mudhead. So I was crawling over the... because I wanted to get to Victoria, and to get around the roundabout would have entailed an enormous detour. And so I thought, drunkenly, I could just sort of clamber over the railing, run across this roundabout, and I got something caught on the railing, and I fell right into the path of an oncoming car, which screeched to a halt, and I was very nearly run over. That was about a year ago.
Did you have your accordion on you? Were you?
See,
if you'd had that when you fell off the bus when you were 14, they'd have been clapping around and going, the accordion guy's here. This is the best thing we've ever seen in Solihull.
You know what that reminds me, isn't it? Oh, it's really horrible being a teenager, isn't it? Almost without exception, like everywhere you go, you're humiliated and you're threatened, and people beat you up.
But that's not all teenagers, though, isn't it?
Isn't that our experience of teenagers? Whereas, in fact, the majority of teenagers, it's a great time because they go, it's brilliant being a teenager. We watch idiots falling off buses and doing pretend jokes, and all the geeks who collect comic books and like music that we don't like at all, that a lot of which doesn't even chart.
Are you old enough yet, Robin, to feel like a vulnerable middle-aged man who could be attacked? I am.
I feel like that.
I always imagine that
someone...
I
tried to nick my phone on the road when I was walking along. Just now? No, a couple of weeks ago in Peckham. Yeah. And I see him all the time. He's like a little boy that lives around near me. He tried to nick my phone. I feel real... Now, whenever I go out, I'm like, someone's going to hurt me.
That's why I never wear a hat. I always know if I ever wore a hat, and I'm getting to the point hairline-wise where if I can just pop a hat on now and keep it on for the next 30 years, no one will realise that the rest of it's gone.
Like the Edge.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very similar.
It's quite cold.
A thinner-brimmed hat than that. But I know that if I wore a hat, undoubtedly teenagers would come up behind, flip the hat over, steal the hat, and then I'd just be a man crazily chasing his own hat.
I had some 8 or 9-year-old boys on where I live in Stoke Newington, in Hackney, the worst place to live in Britain, according to Channel 4. They threw an Allen key at me, at my head. You know what an Allen key is?
Yeah. A little... You get them when you buy a thing. And
at my head. They threw an Allen key at my head.
An Allen key?
Yeah. So I chased after them.
And you chased after them?
I did, yeah. And then I thought, this will look really bad, because they were like 8 or 9 years old. If I get them, what am I going to do?
What would you do when you caught up with
them? And people will assume that I'm an adult attacking some really young children for no reason. Because you wouldn't also went, they threw an Allen key at my head. Someone would go, no, they didn't. That'd be ridiculous. Why would they do that? Well, they did. They threw an Allen key at my head.
A guy in Edinburgh, some men threw those little tiny bits of stone. They're like snapping, and you throw them and it goes bang.
Yeah, yeah.
They're throwing them at people, and I saw them and they could see me. And they were throwing them like at me, like at my body, at my person. And I looked up and I went, you see word. Mm. And he went, it wasn't us. I was like, I know it was you.
That's the worst bit, they're going, it wasn't us.
Yeah, and I was just thinking, yeah, and I was really traumatised. I think people should, yeah, the rule is, don't throw things at people you don't know.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah, that's a good rule.
Leave us oddballs alone.
Yeah.
We just want to live our own life.
I'm 38 years old and I still feel like I'm being bullied by children.
Well, I tell you that thing about with Will, which I hope I haven't talked about before, I might have done, with Will Hodgson again, the moon-faced boy with the pink hair and the Care Bears hanging off. When we were walking down the street in Edinburgh and we saw, you know, that horrible moment where you see some blokes outside a pub and they've started to look at you because you don't fit into their specific type. And they were just drinking and then one of them handed his pint to someone else and kind of warned me, but I thought, oh, something's going to happen. And this guy just ran up really fast behind us. And then jabbed his fingers up Will's arse. Yeah. Right. Obviously he was wearing denim, so there was some, you know, but nevertheless, harshly.
Yeah.
And shouted nonce and then ran off. Right. And we were kind of, Will was really quite upset. And also we kept going, well, hang on a minute, we were just walking down the street. Will was also with his girlfriend as well. Yeah. Going walking down the street and someone runs up behind us, sticks his fingers up someone else's arse, and then yet despite the fact that they've done that gesture, nevertheless the noncedom is still onto the person who's received.
Maybe they meant it like it.
It's like a game.
They passed on the nonce.
It's go and get
or be like when you shake someone's hand and you know, I'd shake someone's hand and go Martin White. That's what he does. He shoves his finger on someone's bottom and go and introduces himself.
Oh, I see.
Maybe that's what it is. That's
his nonce, and you are lovely.
I think it's very funny, like random. I came out of the assembly rooms once in Edinburgh with Richard Thomas and his partner, Hugh Bear, and they were holding hands because they are homosexuals. And some men went past in a car, stopped and reversed to give them to stop and like shout homophobic abuse.
Right, that's a 3-point
kind of
turn.
2 minute, yeah, like too good to miss. Back up, hey, that's bandit. And we were actually, they were upset, and then afterwards we just really laughed about it because we were just thinking that's really, it wasn't even any good, you know, it wasn't like really funny, clever. You think if you liked abusing gays that much, you'd come up with some new stuff.
Yeah, you'd maybe do like a false.
Why do people do that anyway?
Sorry,
Jason.
Like you go, oh, where? Excuse me, can you tell me where is being a gay? Yeah, and then you know something. Yeah. Feel at least more like
you look like you'll know where Bender Street is.
Yeah. The best one of those ever.
Actually, no, we're looking for Osborne Street. It's not Bender Street at all.
There was a teacher at our school, a geography teacher, and everyone thought he was gay. And you know, it's funny when you're 14. And one day, he was pointing at South America, and he went, which country is this? And a boy who subsequently committed suicide, actually.
Oh, God.
He went, you're a gay, sir. And the teacher went, no, it's Uruguay.
Very
it was
good.
Called Roger something, and he went, no, sir, I think you'll find you're a gay.
Very good, isn't it?
Very clever. Very clever well, piece of geography, homophobia, insult.
We're not going to beat that cleverness, so we'll probably pretty much wind it
up. If they'd reversed and said something about which country has the largest, you know, GNP in a particular part of South America, and they'd said Uruguay, and then the men in the car had gone, no, I think you'll find.
And by
that, that would be handed to them.
And
right
GNP
place.
Was gay nonce product anyway.
Oh no!
This is taking far too long.
Did you ever
long.
Have that at school? Because at school, it became the fashion for some girls to wear Gap shirts. Mm. And then people go, that means gay and proud. You're gay and proud.
Yep.
And then they go, well, I am gay. And then there'd be like an awkward silence of like, yeah, well, you're doing the right thing.
Martin, we'll let you have the final word, which puts a lot of pressure on you.
Can I just point out, that's not the sound of my accordion, that's the sound of Stuart rustling some bags there. Could I just, you were talking about hair and sort of disguising hair. I cut my own hair yesterday, we only have one mirror in our house, so I can't see the back of it. So would you look at the back of my head and tell me whether it looks untidy or
rubbish? You've got some bits that you missed, honestly.
So I'll just turn around, and if you could just give me some feedback on the back of my head.
Okay.
Look, he's got two main problems. Oh, yeah. He's got that tuft and that tuft.
Can you talk me through the problems?
There are two areas. There's one above your left ear and one at the kind of top lower section of your head.
Wouldn't it be good if you now brought out a mask and just all decorated?
With hair. Yeah.
To be honest...
That would be the perfect end to this programme.
Well, we're going to... The two things. On the website, there will be... we'll try and work out some kind of reveal system. So see if you can draw...
Mudhead.
Yeah, draw Mudhead and then compare it from Josie's thing. Just rewind it, whatever you do on the podcast. Rewind it and then draw from Josie's description and then compare it with Stuart's actual Mudhead. And also we'll put a picture of the back of Martin White's head on the website and see how many mistakes you can notice on the back of his head. So thank you very much, Martin. You can do the outro. I forgot my animal thing that I'd like. I was reading about somebody painted some shellac on a bee's eye so they could work out where the bees got the sense of direction through dance. But never mind about that. That'll be another time. So that was Show and Tell. It's kind of meant to be called Robin, it's Show and Tell. Well, that seems very arrogant. And we had Stuart Lee and Josie Long and Martin White on Crispy Accordion. The show is produced by Sarah Mahoney and Helen Quigley. Mainly Helen Quigley. Sarah didn't turn up again because she's quite powerful within the hierarchy of Paramount. For more online entertainment, take a look at Paramount Comedy Shortcuts, brand new and original comedy shorts made exclusively for Paramount Comedy.
I shot some of those.
Did you?
Yeah.
So there we go. Brand new and original comedy shorts made exclusively by current and rising stars at the comedy circuit.
Jo Neary's on that, isn't she?
Yeah, I directed her.
Oh, she's very good, amazing. Jo Neary. So have a look at Jo Neary. So to see those things with Jo Neary that Stuart Lee did some directing of, maybe Josie's going to do something with puppets as well, which she might not do, I don't know. Visit paramountcomedy.com/shortcuts and there they are. That's it, really.